Ladies and gentlemen, to another fabulous edition of the Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. And we're part of the guerrilla media network of activists and reporters and whatnot. So basically, one thing we try to do here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show is we get to interview people who are incredibly interesting and do very awesome stuff all around the world to do with patriot movements or whether it be new forms of business. Basically, whatever the heck is very, very interesting that you'd never hear, you will hear right here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show through your ears. And in that very spirit, the Christchurch quake. Now, as many of you know, it flattened the city and pushed a whole lot of liquefaction all over the place. All the silt, mud, took out power and, you know, the general earthquake palaver. I think earthquakes have been overdone. Now, some would say that I'm kind of rude to speak like that, but the truth is, earthquakes have been over-reported, over-exaggerated. And even if people have died and the tragedy continues to ensue, by continually reporting of it, I believe that the media winds up causing a bit of apathy by repeating the same old nonsense again and again. But if you hear something new, it makes you feel a little bit different. Live, ladies and gentlemen, we have a man named Jeff, who is from Christchurch. Jeff, welcome to the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hey, one thing, just give us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a bit like yourself in the sense I don't buy the official lies. I run a website, jeffbook.co.nz, which is a bit of an experiment. I'm an advocate of 9/11 truth, and basically anything that makes sense, and an advocate of this show, of course.
Yeah, an avid advocate. Some of you may have seen the videos on Mr. News Guerrilla Media where there's like three different ones, me talking about John Key, me talking about Australians, and what was the other one? Getting to the root of the problem, I believe, were the three video titles. And Jeff had actually gone through the radio archives of the Vinnie Eastwood Show and cut those out and sent them to me as little like segment promos. So I made them into videos. And I thought they were quite fabulous. Thank you, Jeff.
Also, I've got a few more of those on my site. It's pretty easy to find off the front page for anyone who's interested. Jeffbook.co.nz, and it's right there.
All right. Jeffbook.co.nz, ladies and gentlemen, proudly speaking out on 26 AM FM stations worldwide on the Vinnie Eastwood Show at www.thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. That's Vinnie with a Y. Join us in the chat. We'll be right back.
We can be more than ever before.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back, Jeff, from jeffbook.co.nz. One thing that's really been puzzling me lately is why is it that people split into dissident factions when it comes to truth movementology, or if that's even a word? You know, everybody seems to want to go in all these different directions on issues. And you know, for some part, I agree with that sort of mentality, how you really do need some diversity and you do need to listen to new ideas all the time. On the other hand, nobody gets anything done. Well, there's plenty of people who do get a heck of a lot done. But there's others who just plain don't. And that's the real difference between taking action and just talking about it. How much influence does one word from your voice have? Then multiply that by YouTube, multiply that by mainstream media coverage, multiply that by mainstream radio coverage. You know, you can make a word mean a lot more than it really is just by amplifying it. And that's why people vote for people like Barack H. O'Barry. Because the power of his words, as his eyes and his head flick from teleprompter to teleprompter, are very, very nice and well performed, aren't they? Barack Obama, 2012. Change you can beg for. Authorized by TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hi.
Yeah.
So anyway, these opinions I was going to read out.
Go for it, mate.
Well, here in New Zealand at the moment, we have this SIS amendment bill for the Security Intelligence Non-Service, or the Security Intelligence Disservice, whatever way you want to put it, and they're amending it so they can break new laws. That they wouldn't be able to break otherwise if it weren't for the crimes being legalized. And this is kind of interesting. If you go to 3news.co.nz at the moment, you can find the opinions section. It's usually on the right. And there's something here titled, "Should new SIS laws be open to public debate?" Because they're legalizing the crime of hacking, so now the government will be able to hack into your computer, although they've been doing it for ages anyway. So here on the opinions page, we have some interesting things. There's my comment. But to contrast it, first of all, I'll read out a comment by someone who put their name in as Roland the Rat. He says, "What's the point of having a security service if everyone knows what they are up to? Are we that thick? I have nothing to fear from them. I am not a threat to New Zealand, so I do not fear phone tapping, etc., etc." So basically, he doesn't fear losing or giving up his rights voluntarily. And he says, "Thanks to people who deal in terror, we have now come to this." And then there's my comment where I respond to the question by 3News. They say, "This new law increases government power, and the debate for it is not even democratic. It's just done in secret. Do you think it should be open to public scrutiny?" To which I say, under my full name, Jeffrey Philip Mitchell, I say here in the comment section, "Of course it should be open to public debate. Where are we, Iran or North Korea?" What this really means is the government is giving itself legal immunity to commit what would otherwise constitute a crime. Hacking is a serious offence, and the government should not be allowed to hack into the computer systems of law-abiding citizens. The Security Intelligence Disservice is a threat to our sovereignty. It is basically an extension of the National Security Agency. That's where the SIS marching orders come from. The government is not taking away the rights of Al-Qaeda members. They're taking away your rights. Don't forfeit your rights just because you don't use them. If you have no political actions to hide, then you still should not give up your rights. There is no compromise. Once you give up your human and civil rights, you'll never see them again. Please, New Zealand, don't be like the German people in the 1930s. The threat of terrorism is overblown. The only threat is the government. The government has a contempt for democracy. They make all their actions secret and all our actions public. If everything has to be behind closed doors, then it makes you wonder what kind of terrible plan they have for this country. National and Labour don't care about New Zealand anymore. The politicians are just lining themselves up for future job opportunities, probably at the UN.
Yep, and the UN now is invading more countries. They're now going into, the Ivory Coast, isn't it? That's now being bombed? Some dude who's like got a disputed election and it's still disputed. We don't know. Apparently the votes haven't all been counted yet. Something missed. Who knows? Who knows? But now the UN is now authorizing bombing Libya, bombing Ivory Coast. And all the conspiracy theorists are all of a sudden going, hey, that we've been saying that the UN's going to start, you know, using their army and all of that kind of jazz to start taking over the world and try and form a global government. Maybe that's starting to happen now. Perhaps we should be extremely concerned. Sorry, what was that, Jeff?
It really is a new world order.
You know, it's just the old world order trying to dress it up as Webster Tarpley says. It doesn't matter how much you dress it up. It's still a terrible fate for anybody, which I wouldn't wish. Now, one thing I'd like to divulge into here, Jeff, for a minute, is the way that the legislation is being rushed through, pushed through, being done in secret and being done with all these excuses. For example, the pretext, the excuse for giving everybody's rights away, for giving the SIS all these powers, power to hack into your computer, the power to bug you and track you wherever the heck you go. You know, this is just the beginning. This is only a template of what the plan is for broader society. Imagine everybody tracked and traced everywhere they go. Okay? Whenever you think about government and legislation that they're passing, bear in mind that they're very limp-wristed. So they'll only do like a little bit, you know, just, oh, darling, can you just give us this bit of legislation here? I'll very, very much love you. Thank you very much. And then they destroy your country. You know, this is how freedom gets lost, because people don't see it coming. They don't see the ramifications of each law and bit of legislation that gets passed. They, in fact, most people, to my reckoning, have no idea that any kind of legislation is being passed or any idea what it is at all. People are so foolish to assume that if they go around their daily lives and fill out a piece of paper and tick a box once every 3 years, that their democracy and their country will remain stable enough for them to live a peaceful, happy life. I don't think so. I think you need to really participate. Some people choose to go into the army. Some people choose to go into politics. Some people choose to do community groups, start websites, do radio shows. Everybody's got a talent. And this legislation really kind of shocks me, Jeff. And but it doesn't surprise me, though. What do you reckon?
Well, it certainly doesn't surprise me. What does surprise me is how gullible people can be. I mean, there's still people saying, well, I've got nothing to hide, so it's not really a problem. Well, if you've got nothing to hide and it's not really a problem, then how about you go down to Immigration New Zealand or Customs and we get them to put on some long latex gloves and search your something or other for explosive devices. I mean, if you've got nothing to hide, it's not really a problem, is it? We could set up checkpoints searching people in these ways all over town, and it wouldn't really be a problem. It would just take a few minutes longer to get into town. I just love the premise that people have. Oh, I'm good. I'm with the leader. I'll just put up with forfeiting the rights of over 4 million people.
Well, you know, everybody seems to be forfeiting their rights. And, you know, this is the thing. It's not isolated to New Zealand, you know. It's happening in America too. I mean, speaking about, like, the Libya and the Ivory Coast invasion, did you know that there are 420,000 foreign troops on U.S. soil at the moment?
I'm pretty sure I've heard something like that before.
Yeah. As of April 2011. To date, there's something very, very wrong going on, and there's something very, very bad planned. Radiation levels, according to the EPA, are now 80 times the amount of I-131 allowed in drinking water. It was a story in from the Intel Hub. You know, it's freaking serious out there, man. And I was talking with Lisa Err from the formerly of the Green Party and the creator of Lisa's Hummus. If you've ever heard of Lisa's, Jeff?
Yep.
Yeah. That Lisa.
Good hummus.
Yeah.
Very good hummus.
Very good hummus. And it was interesting, you know, because we went to a conference where, what was his name? Murray Horton from Kafka, the campaign against the foreign control of Aotearoa, was giving a speech, and I videoed it. And later on, we were having tea and biscuits and whatnot, and somebody brought in hummus, and it was Lisa's. You know, but something tells me that this is not coincidental. The TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, which is basically the NAFTA or GATT for New Zealand, just like was done to the United States and outsourced all their work, closed down a heck of a lot of their factories and drove down working conditions for American workers, they're now planning to do this to us. You know, they haven't done that yet. But then we're going to start going into, like, all the private health care and all of that kind of stuff where we'll be like the Philippines, where two people died in your family of TB because they just couldn't afford the 150 or 400 bucks to get the medication properly. You know, it's freaking brutal out there, and that brutality is coming to a town near you, I assure you, worldwide. Doesn't matter where you are, believe me. You'll start seeing things that make you go, holy cow. There's people with guns walking in the streets. What's going on here? Well, hopefully not. Maybe that'll be an eventual consequence of a or some kind of a staged uprising. There's, speaking of infighting, Jeff, do we even have any, like, militias or anything, like, resembling a fighting force here in New Zealand that could, like, fight against the government? I don't really think so.
Well, we've got Survive Club. But
Survive Club? What the heck is that?
Oh, well, it's like a... it's like kind of like a... it's just a survival club. It's not really a militia, though. If you look at their promo video, they do they do hunt possums and eat them. And drive very scary-looking four-wheel drives, but they don't really have guns because we have these laws where you can only have weapons that hold this many bullets at a time, and then you have to store them in a way that the government regulates. And if you don't store guns in your house in the way that the government told you to, then it's against the law, even though it's on your own property.
Yeah, well, we've got very, very strict gun laws and all of that kind of stuff. But you know, people still have a lot of guns. Farmers, for example, huge amounts of weaponry. But something tells me that a bunch of farmers with a few rifles could cause an awful lot of damage fighting some kind of guerrilla war.
Well, let's not try.
Well, you know, that's just thinking of a worst case scenario with a bright attitude, you know.
Well, let's get into the best case scenario of dealing with the current problems, because there are two things I see now. firstly, this SIS amendment bill, which is just so obviously wrong. It's publicly, it's there, they're doing it in secret, it's taking away the rights of over 4 million people. And, yeah, I don't really know what to say about it, but I've gone on the record speaking against it, and other people should do the same, because if you give up your rights for the common good, then you're following a major component of the Communist Manifesto. I mean, well, it's in the Communist Manifesto to...
Go ahead.
It's in the Communist Manifesto to give up your rights for the common good.
Yeah. Give up your rights for the common good. Now, how could any common good come about if you don't have any rights?
That's a very good question. I believe that is explained quite well in the Citizens Rulebook from Infowars.com. They say that having rights can lead to chaos. Too much freedom means chaos. And therefore, if we got rid of all freedom, we would have a perfect society, in theory.
In theory, right? So nobody had any rights. They were completely dictated. Everything would be peaceful. Well, that'd actually be correct, because nobody would be foolish enough to try and uprise against somebody with a machine gun. That's the kind of dictatorship that we have to look forward to. I mean, look at London. More security cameras there than anybody could ever lay eyes on. It's unbelievable. Somebody gets photographed several thousand times a day.
So anyway, regarding solutions and things, there's this issue number two that's bugging me. Here in Christchurch, we have just a mainly local newspaper, though it is sold throughout the country. It's called The Press. And they sometimes have a section called Good Living. And I never read it because it's just fluff. And anyway, something snuck under my nose recently, and I didn't hear about it until a week later. There's something about how we need fluoride in the water because, you see, following the earthquake, the water's been contaminated, and we'll get back to this in a moment.
You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. My very special guest from jeffbock.co.nz is Jeff Mitchell, and we'll be right back after the break.
I got some so-called friends, smile right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Who's that? Are you on?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Check out our fabulous archives there, and indeed all the fabulous Kiwi collaborators that we have interviewed, more activists and researchers and politicians or whatever, activists I'd probably say, than anybody else in the country's ever interviewed. It's quite a catalogue. Now, speaking of catalogues of information, the amount of news coverage that has happened with this Christchurch quake is quite immense. But the news people I see are very, very rarely in the eastern suburbs when they're broadcasting, because that is the incredibly badly run down part of town. Now, are they then playing down how bad the situation is? I've seen them talk in reference to the eastern suburbs and maybe a slight amount of coverage, but the on the whole, it's just live reporting from some place that didn't look that bad. With a few police and soldiers with guns and APCs walking around them, you know. That's about the extent of it. And that's all we see on the media. I mean, and on the ground, Jeff, I mean, there's not exactly cameras coursing through every street, is there?
No, and I spoke to my boss the other day, who's had her house basically destroyed and the whole foundation and all the soil's probably destroyed, and she said that the media's just stuck in the CBD, but they're not looking at the major damage in the suburb that's completely screwed, and some people don't have water or electricity. I'm not sure about the latest, but I'm just glad I'm not living on the east side of town. I'm in the rich people's area of Findleton, actually pronounced as Findleton. But anyway.
The friend is silent.
No, I was going to mention my solution to the Ministry of Health, because they're trying to amalgamate Christchurch into their big fluoride fortress, the not so fabulous fluoride fortress that they're trying to make this country into. And that, like I was saying before the break, they've said, well, since your water's contaminated after the earthquake and God knows what kind of bacteria is going through all the water pipes into your kitchen sink, we put chlorine in the water, and now that you've accepted chlorine, we might want to add in fluoride. And that was in the good living section of the press. It should have really been in the bad living section of the press. Pushing that.
It should have been in the soon-to-be-not-living section of the press.
Yeah, absolutely. That pushed everyone's traumatized from the earthquake, and I don't even know if it's worth going out and then trying to hassle people about current events, because everyone will probably just get angry at me. But the Ministry of Health...
Angry footage is the best, bro.
I don't have a camera, remember? but anyway, the Ministry of Health sees this crisis as a great opportunity they can't put to waste, so they're going to try to sneak in water fluoridation, or at least that's what seems to be happening. And my solution to this is, since I'm so sick of them trying to force medicate the entire population of Christchurch, I'm thinking that now I'll just write a letter in the usual format, dear resident, with my full name and the subject line and my details on the top right, and just write a letter exclusively on water fluoridation, say, this is complete garbage and Ministry of Health is trying to sneak it in. They're like the Ministry of Stealth. And then when I'm bored of that, I might write another letter, dear resident, such and such. I could write about the SIS Amendment Bill. I could do that the following week. And then after that week, there'll be another example of government corruption or wrongdoing or something else to violate our rights or whatever, and I'll have something else to write about. But there's
See,
a correlation.
What you're talking about, what you're really talking about, Jeff, is you need to have a local paper to publish an article in every week.
Well, I could just write down with a pen my website address and say, hey, visit this, and I could put that in the mailbox, and people could then access huge amounts of information off my website if I choose to add it, and then I don't have any printing costs.
Yeah.
So that's not bad. And this fluoride issue I've really got to get into, because it really is the best. The Ministry of Health is just sad. It's anyone who has pets knows that the best way to medicate your pet is to always sneak medication in through the food or through the water, because they're stupid. And they won't eat the medication on its own, but if you put it in their water, then the pet doesn't have a choice. And the Ministry of Health is looking at people in Christchurch like they're cats or dogs or something. And we're going to kind of oust this agenda of theirs, kind of like it was banned in Timaru, 2 hours south of Christchurch. Fluoridation was banned there. It's always been contentious. Because one woman just wrote letters, dropped them in mailboxes. They had referendums and people coming to talk about it. Then it was banned in Ashburton, which is about maybe 1 hour out south of Christchurch from where I am. And they're great examples of just one person doing a mail drop, getting a referendum, and then banning water fluoridation. And I'm going to do the same here in Christchurch.
Yeah. Well, you can do the same thing on a small scale that you do on a large scale, you know. It should not be that difficult. And also, out in the eastern suburbs, there should be some dudes in a caravan from... I forget which radio station it is. I had them on as guests. And they've got a little local caravan that is set up as a freaking radio station, mate. I reckon you should cruise down there and do a broadcast.
Well, I'm not sure what that place is. Yeah, and I know there's a community radio station over the hill in Littleton, but this one in the eastern... Actually, yeah, there is
not,
one in
not
the
Not Volcano
eastern.
Radio. Volcano Radio, recently, in fact, now that you talk about the fluoride issue, Dr. Paul Connett from the Fluoride Action Movement, the PhD professor, you know, kind of guy, who fronts the movement.
Yeah.
And he just recently talked here in New Zealand, and I made a video... which is now uploaded to YouTube, of his full presentation and the questions and answers afterwards. And basically, we've now designed up a DVD cover and a label and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah, Jeff, I reckon we should pop DVDs in people's mailboxes. And it's got a little thing on it that encourages people to copy and distribute them themselves.
Sounds like a good idea. And speaking of DVDs, I've just got John Pilger's film burned to a number of DVDs. I've probably only got about 10. But even so, that's a great film, John Pilger, The War You Don't See. because the reason why the government gets away with so much is because people don't know what's actually happening. And then when you do show them what's happening, all this accountability suddenly catches up. You can do a whole lot all at once. So, yeah, I'm going to distribute those, maybe just stick them in Letterbox.
yeah, absolutely. And people can just watch the video online for free as well, man. So, yeah. I think that it's part of what we should be doing in this movement, Jeff, to kind of support each other in whatever each other's doing in whatever capacity that we can, you know? And you know, if you don't have the time to help somebody else out just a little bit, you know, with something only you can do, then hey, make time. It's got to be done, mate.
Yep. So I'm going to do this letter thing, and actually, come to think of it, DVDs are far too expensive to put in mailboxes, and they take forever to burn sometimes. I reckon the best thing to do is just do a letter drop, put your full name on it, keep it sane and legible, and then offer a DVD, but don't just give it to them up front, because they'll probably just use it as a beer coaster anyway.
Yeah, they might do, but it'll be a beer coaster that has writing on it and stuff like that that everybody would see. You know, it's kind of like the act of giving it out, I think, is a reasonable idea. But it can be costly, though, you know. This is the thing. I mean, unless you have, like, some wealthy, generous donator or you've even got a CD burner of yourself, you know, you can just copy it and flick it out. Print, or you can purchase printed copies or, you know, I can send you the JPEG files and all of that kind of jazz. You know, this is really what we can do now on a home computer, is that we can make a DVD and of a conference in a couple of days and have them printing and available for sale. Now, this is along a train of thought that I'm kind of working on here, is that all of the different problems that we have associated, you know, whether it be fluoride or the search and surveillance bill or the real story about what's going on in Christchurch, and you know, it's just basically because we've got an appalling media that don't report on all the tough stuff. You know, that's why they get away with it, because they're not exposed to the bright lights of publicity. Oh, my goodness. Reporters used to be real nasty. But now they're just kind of flipping and smiling. Go ahead, Jim.
Remember the minister who spent, I don't know what it was, maybe $10 on a dirty film when he was in some hotel? Well, the media went after that guy. Oh, you spent $10 on a dirty film, and, you know, that's $10 of the people's money. But, of course, they make it sound like we should be really angry because it's our money, when really it's just money printed out of thin air at no cost. And then they'll get aggressive over something trivial, like, I know, the Māori Party election spending goes $50 over. Oh, my gosh, they have to have a barbecue and sell sausages to get that money back. But then the media won't go after John Key over the SIS amendment bill because that's just too tough. It's like when Richard Gage came to Wellington in November 2009, he did his presentation. The media just wet their pants and ran away. They didn't want to deal with it. They put it in the too hard basket. But then someone's spending $10 of tax money. That's terrible. We better go after them and harass them. But when the government removes all basic rights and when they get rid of legal principles that make this country great, then no one does a damn thing, except for us.
Yeah. Well, and we're all that's required, Jeff, you know? And as we stand up, others will stand up as well. Everybody needs to realize that they are an inspiration to everybody that they meet, okay? You can inspire people to great acts or to great evils. And if you're a politician, it's most certainly evil. No. The politicians aren't evil. I mean, most likely they're just passive dupes who are trying to do some good and eventually wind up making far too many compromises in order to stay in their chosen career path. It's unfortunate, but hey, that's the way it is. But it's not the way it should be. And the only reason it's staying the way it is, because we're not making it the way it should be. We're not making ourselves the way we should be. We should be up in arms. Nobody should be pushing us around. Nobody should be stealing all our money and selling off our assets. Get this. They sell off our assets and then ask the citizens who already own those assets to buy those assets off them. And then transnational corporations will come in, as they always do, and buy off all the shares from all the mum and dad investors who will wind up not being able to pay the power bills to a power company they once owned and then paid for and then sold and then spent the money. Paying their power bills. You know, destitute. That's what we're going to wind up being. Completely and utterly destitute as a country. When are people going to wake up and understand that the role that they play in their communities is absolutely integral to the functioning of the entire country? Really? You put a pebble into a pond of water and you watch those ripples go wide and far and affect everything around them. You can do the same. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest from jeffbook.co.nz is Jeff Mitchell, our Kiwi collaborator for today. And we'll be right back. Join us in the chat room at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Back in a moment. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Shout out to my listeners in Hamilton who just recently had Rush 89 FM, who were airing the Vinnie Eastwood Show, shut down by the government. I wish I could say I was responsible. I'd take that as a badge of honour, you know. Yeah, but it just came to the end of its licensing, and the government wasn't going to budge. They were bureaucrats, and they didn't want to have a model that worked. They wanted the model that was written down on paper.
No bailouts.
Hey?
No bailouts. Like with 3 News, they can get a loan. because they're the mainstream media, and we need them to be informed. we need them for so we can be informed.
Did you know that TV3 has recently been prosecuted for tax evasion, large-scale tax evasion? And they actually might be just let, they might actually just let them get away with it. I mean, what happened when a whole group of Australian banks were collectively charged for tax evasion of up to 2 billion New Zealand dollars? And they settled out of court. and didn't pay anywhere near the amount of accrued interest and penalty fees and all of that kind of stuff that was associated with owing that amount of money to the country. Because what happens when transnational corporations get involved in your country is that they steal your money. They don't pay taxes and they screw you over. They demolish your country economically. An economic weapon is just as powerful as a nuclear one, except the scars last a lot longer. Now, speaking of economic weapons, my very special guest coming at us live from the most shaken city in the whole of New Zealand, it's Jeff from jeffbook.co.nz. Welcome back.
Yep, I'm still here, I think.
Yeah, yeah. One thing that really obliterates my confidence. Oh, no, actually, no. I didn't have any confidence in the government to begin with. Scratch that. One thing that really empowers my disconfidence in the government is that they keep doing terrible things endlessly. You know, there's unlimited amounts you can complain about. And they're all going on at the same time. I'm like a kid in a candy store. I love to rag on the government. They give me such fabulous material. Good for me, but not so good for the rest of the country. Speaking of the rest of the country, Jeff, how is everybody actually kind of holding up down in Christchurch? I mean, we've got this eastern suburb all completely all up the F. The main business district is shut down. There's going to be a whole bunch of city high-rise buildings and they're going to be controlled demolition. Obviously, they're going to just set small office fires in the top and they'll naturally explode into particleized dust within moments. But otherwise, the economy of Christchurch, I feel, will never recover. You know, it'll cost too much to rebuild. It'll cost more. You know, when you got a car and it's broken down real bad, and it would it'd just be cheaper to scrap it and get a new car. What do you think?
Oh well, it's kind of confusing since I don't really know anything about economics. Christchurch is kind of like a city, but with no economy and with only two malls open, which it's not exactly great. But hey, our house is still in one piece, even if the whole city's destroyed and no one's making any money. And yeah,
see, it just seems kind of bleak, doesn't it? There's very little positive that you can say.
Well, I live in a part of town that's not trashed, that's positive, but yeah, if you live on the east side of town, good luck with the PTSD by some Prozac. Prozac's terrible.
That reminds me of one of these really terrible American sayings called sucks to be you. You know what I'm saying? It's like, thank goodness I'm sweet as. But it's a shame about all those other people. Sucks to be them. Seems kind of heartless, man. And I don't know. The whole concept of disaster survival and recovery seems to be this immense challenge that the country faces, and it's going to really leave quite a scar on its history, you know, for a long, long time. I'd like to thank you very much, Jeff, for coming on the show with me today. And you have yourself a fabulous day in the sunny, slave, soon-to-be fluoridated, fabulous capital, Christchurch.
Well, yeah, we will resist. And again, if there's any confusion, the website is Jeff Book, kind of like Facebook, but it's Jeff Book, Jeff with the J, jeffbook.co.nz. I'm always bored. Send me an email. And, yeah, see you around.
All right, there he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Jeff Mitchell from jeffbook.co.nz. That concludes the first hour of the broadcast for today. Coming up in hour number two, if we're extremely lucky, we may have Adrian Salbucci. If any of you have heard of him, I'll explain more after the break. Now, go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and join us in the chat room there, and let's have some fun and talk about it. See you later. Next sec. Ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Speaking of, like, wow, one thing I'm just kind of pondering to myself is just how bad is it really? Right, you know, we get all these awful news reports about the radiation levels and the scariness and the and the police state measures, the state asset banks sold off, you know. How bad is it really? You know? And I'm not no apologist by any means, but are people being put under undue stress due to these actions? And perhaps, and in my opinion, the cause of the stress is because you see the problems and can't do anything about them, or rather don't do anything about them. Instead, you just worry about them a little bit. It's in the back of your mind, so it causes stress. But however, if you're doing something about it all the time, it relieves the stress. You know, kind of like when you're thirsty, you've got a drink. When you've got tyrants taking over your country, you got to fight them. Ah, that was better. My fascism drink, you know. Well, it sounds like an energy drink, doesn't it? You know, fascism in a can. Yep, and it'd be a nice little design too. Like, it'll basically just be a can with a little Hitler moustache, you know. It'd be fabulous. And I'm sure the kids would love it too, especially if it was like, I don't know, sold with their Happy Meals at McDonald's. As I'm sure McDonald's probably will do sometime, as soon as society gets to the point where they're just that degraded and debauched and lacking in moral and ethic of any description, for that matter, let alone Christian type of moral and ethic, which apparently isn't that upset about paedophilia or sodomy. But that's all behind closed doors. The public face is different from the private face, Vinny. You've got to take people at that other face value, not at face value. people call you cynical because you see a scumbag who engages in untold levels of scumbaggery, acting again like a scumbag, and you say to everybody, hey, he's a scumbag, and he's going to engage in more scumbaggery down the track too. Yeah, but you're just a tinfoil hat wearer. You're suspicious for no reason. There's no evidence. You're listening to the Vinny Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Be right back after the break. Join us in the chat.
Some kind of way out of here, said a joker to the thief. There's too much confusion.
Oh, Adrian, you're kind of breaking up there.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, there's just something coming up in the background there. Sorry about that, folks. Welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Hopefully we'll be able to reconnect you, Adrian. Hold on a second. There we go. All right, welcome back to the Vinny Eastwood Show. Adrian Salvucci is my guest, and we're going to be talking about the New World Order, global government, stuff like that. We welcome him now. Adrian, welcome to the Vinny Eastwood Show.
I hear you loud and clear. How are you?
I'm somewhat fabulous, is my party line, so I'm going to be voting fabulous this year. Now, I wanted you to kind of give a plug to your website and the materials that you do, and also explain to myself and the audience just a little bit about yourself.
Well, okay. First of all, I'm down here in Buenos Aires, Argentina. My website is asalbucci, that's asalbucci.com.ar. And what I've been doing is for the last 12 or 15 years, I've been writing extensively in Spanish on everything that's happening in the world. And as we were just discussing a few moments ago, one of the books that really opened my eyes very, very, very nicely was Ed Griffin's The Creature from Jekyll Island. So that helped an awful lot. And what I did is I put a lot of the information that is out there in English and that has been out there for many, many years into a book in Spanish, the title of which would translate as The World's Mastermind. And, here we are. Things, I started doing some videos in English and some other stuff in English, and I think that we're setting up a nice anti-world government network the world over, and I'm very glad to be a part of it.
Well, yeah, and this is the thing. The anti-world government movement can comprise of virtually any group and virtually any person, because no one on this planet in their right mind wants this kind of dictatorship, okay? A world dictatorship. Heck no. Tyrants throughout history have killed millions upon millions of people lusting after this prize. And no, I don't think anybody should ever have that kind of power.
Well, absolutely. But, one of the things that I try to bring as added value to the table, and mind you, One of the advantages I have, at least in my country, in Latin America, is that since I was brought up in the United States, to be precise in New York City, to be even more precise in Queens County, I do speak English the way I speak Spanish. So that is a quite an asset down here, not just because I can communicate in both languages, but also because I'm able to, you know, access all the vast amount of literature that's been written and that is being written on the subject in English. Being said, I can also bring as value to the table the fact that Argentina has systematically been on the losing side of this new world order as it comes about. And if anything, we've been sort of a testing ground. And as a testing ground, I now find that many of the things that are happening now, for example, the 2008 financial crisis that erupted in September 2008, well, we've been through that time and again. We've been through hyperinflation. We've been through a systemic banking, monetary, and financial collapse. We've been through military civilian coups. We've been through veritable social war. So a lot of things that are unfortunately happening now, not only in different parts of the world, but specifically in America and in Europe, well, in a way, we've seen that, we've done that. So what I try to do is I try to explain the mechanisms behind all of this so that people will understand exactly what you were saying, Vince, that this is not something haphazard. There is a plan behind this. And if there's a plan, there have to be planners. And these planners are not that many, but they do concentrate huge amounts of power illegitimately, because it's just absolutely wrong that such a small group of people should wield so much power. So the best thing that I think we can do, and I know that's what you're doing and folks like Ed Griffin are doing, is trying to explain it, show everybody that this is a model that they have, that this is not just a comedy of errors, but it has specific medium and long-term planning. And when you understand how something works, well, then you can start understanding what the diagnosis is and why it's working so badly for all of us. And when you understand those two things, you can start thinking, well, what should we do to stop them?
Now, what should we do to stop them? I mean, in my opinion, it's all about media, you know, more interviews, more radio, more TV, more internet, you know, everything. Just push it out there, you know, get everybody hooked on it, because everybody's currently plugged into the Matrix in some way, shape or form. And so if you're inserting alternative information into that Matrix that people rely on for their current information, I think it's all the better, because then it can infect and go viral. Essentially.
Well, absolutely. You see, there's good news and bad news. The bad news is that they have a lot of power. The bad news is that they have grown tremendously. The bad news is that they have been able to take over a superpower, the United States of America, and also a super region, let's call it that way, which is the European Union, because people were very complacent. Because, as I said before, whilst countries like Argentina were always being banged and slammed and made to bite the dust, Americans, until a few years ago, had a pretty good. They had cheap oil, they had good credit, and they thought life was wonderful and that bad things happened elsewhere. That being said, which is the bad side, the good side is that if you were to ask me, well, how do we fight them back? Well, I can tell you, not militarily, because there's no way we can do that. Not with money, because no matter how much money you or I or anybody who's listening can gather, it will always be just a penny compared to the zillions that they can print out of nothing, as Ed Griffin so well explained. They just print the money they need. So the good news is that this is a psychological war. And when it comes to psy war, each and every one of us is a veritable ticking time bomb. All we have to do is think with our own minds, not let ourselves be coaxed by them, and start being creative. And if you or I or anybody out there listening can be more creative than these monsters who run the New York Times, Fox News, CBS, NBC, ABC, etc., etc., it just requires that any one of us can be more creative than them. And as you just said, creative ideas go viral. They spread like literally like viruses, and we can make their entire system catch cold, so to speak, and we can tip the whole thing almost overnight, I would say, not literally in terms of hours, but very quickly, because what you need, Vince, is to have critical mass of people like yourself, myself, and those who are listening. And critical mass is far, far, far smaller in numbers than you can be led to believe. Now, they want to, part of their psychological warfare is to make us think that they are far more powerful than they really are, and at the same time, to make us think that we are far, far weaker than we really are. So there is a gap. They're powerful, we're not. But the gap is not that big. And when you start seeing that the gap is not that big, you start to realize that you shouldn't see the glass as half empty, but as really half full, and it's full of a lot of great stuff.
Well, yeah, yeah. It's always a bright idea to have a positive attitude, and in my opinion, laugh about everything. Because, you know, it's pretty freaking terrible if you can't laugh about it. You go nuts.
Well, but look, let me put it this way. Irrespective of the fact that we are now in 2011, but if we were speaking now in 1911 or in 1811 or in 2111, life is always full of risks. It's full of good things and bad things. To live is to risk. So you have to know, in a way, you have to do sort of a personal and a group risk management exercise. Every time you leave your front door, you're running a risk. You run, well, I won't even mention them because they're so obvious. You know, every day can be our last day on Earth. We just don't know. So if you just look at the downside, you're going to say, oh dear, oh my, I better not go out into the street. I better not take a plane. I better not drive. I better not do this. I might lose my job. I better not do that. I might lose my wife. I better not. And you figure, okay, you have to understand risk. You have to understand the situation. You have to understand how the world works, which is what most people don't understand. And then you can take calculated, informed risk. And calculated informed risk is always something that you figure the risk is worth it, because if I can achieve my goal, it is far more important than the risk I'm taking. However, those risks that you don't understand, either because you're ignorant or you're too busy watching the telly to even bother about them, you run those risks because somebody is making them. You run them and you don't realize what happens. Look at what happened to the people in Japan. They thought everything was wonderful. Their government has always been that, not only their government and their corporations and their banks are filled with trilateral commission members who have kept the country aligned to U.S. and global power elite policies, and everything was just grand until all of a sudden a terrible natural or maybe not so natural disaster hits them on the 11th of March, and now a good part of their country is contaminated with radioactivity. So things can go well until they go horribly wrong. And it's important for all of us to understand what those risks are. And in order to do so, Vince, we need to have a model that explains how the world really works, which has nothing to do with what CNN, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and all the mainstream media tell us it is. The way they tell us is sort of a Walt Disney version of politics and history. You know, the cat is always bad, Tweety Bird is always good. And the world is not made up of absolute good guys and absolute bad guys. Actually, the truth normally lies somewhere in between, some gray area. And the gray area depends on your own personal interest and your country's personal interest and even mankind's personal interest. And the global media certainly do not look after the common good nor the national interest of any country, whether it be the States, New Zealand, Argentina, Brazil, or Britain or Europe.
Well, it's very true that in reality, the coyote does eat the roadrunner.
Right. Exactly. Oh, you've said something very important. Oh, you've really touched upon a great point, because the coyote does eat the roadrunner in real life. However, the brand of quote-unquote democracy that they shove down our throats ends up being the completely free chicken area with 35 free chickens and one totally free and democratic fox. If the one fox ends up eating the 35 chickens, well, you know, he's just using his democratic rights, and maybe the chickens are not using their democratic rights. So we have to really have that very much in mind, that so-called democracy is probably the best system that the global power elite have to control entire countries. I call it down here in Argentina, because I give a lot of conferences here, I call it the CEO system. In other words, they come to a country like Argentina, which is really very, very weak when compared to any European country or Europe as a whole. Yeah. Let's identify the people who are willing to work for us, the locals, local Argentinians, who are willing to work for us for money. And when they identify them, they will finance their campaigns, finance that they should be on all TV and radio talk shows, finance their parties, and the New York Times will make a good note on them, a good article on them, and the same with, I don't know, the BBC and NBC and so forth, et cetera, and they, when they are catapulted to becoming president or prime minister or senator or representative, you have local people doing what you want. passing the laws and enacting the laws that you need, taking all the measures that you need, and that is the best way of doing it. So if you were to redefine the president of Argentina and probably the prime minister of New Zealand, the president of the United States, not as a sovereign president, but as a CEO, then that clarifies a lot of things. Because if, for example, if Barack Obama is basically a CEO, then let's try and ask ourselves, who are the board of directors of the United States of America who actually end up naming the CEO? And above that, who are the shareholders who own the United States of America? And they are the guys who actually name the board of directors who in turn name the CEO. And, you know, when you start looking at it from that point of view, making those parallels, things become a little bit more clear.
Oh, and the CEO appoints the deputy CEO, and the deputy's assistant appoints the receptionist, and the receptionist appoints the so on and so forth, so that nobody actually gets to meet the shareholders except the board of directors.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things, one of the phenomena that nobody talks about is that one of the most important things that happened after the Second World War, but especially in the last 30 years, Vince, is that power, in other words, power is the capacity to do certain things no matter what and avoid that certain other things be done. That's what power is all about. That used to be very much focus on the nation state, on the public nation state. Who had the power? The president or the king or the queen. The bucks really stopped at the White House, or the buck really stopped with the king or the queen or the prime minister or whatever. However, what we've seen is a privatization of power. Power has been privatized. So today, it's not focused anymore in public structures allied or related to the sovereign nation state. It is completely focused in a network of Fortune 500 corporations, major banks, major universities that will tell you what you how things are and how things are not according to their interests. Naturally, the mainstream media and so forth. So you have a veritable army of industry, banking, commerce.
What's interesting is that at the base level of the organization of groups like major corporations, there's this intense compartmentalization that goes on. In a company, you have to have, let's say a million people working for you or something, and only very few people will have the overview at all if they're informed. And what you hear on the front lines is not what is being talked about on the tall towers and the penthouses, I can assure you. So whatever company that you're working for, if you don't know the personal details of the shareholders and things of that nature, you don't know the true nature of the company where you're serving.
Well, basically, if you work for a company, irrespective of the level you are, you're like a CIA agent. A CIA agent works on a need-to-know basis. In other words, if you're way down, if you're a lowly agent, they tell you, tomorrow at 7 p.m., go to such and such a building and cut off the electricity. And if you ask, wait, why are we doing that? They'll just look back at you and say, wait a second. Your job is to go tomorrow to that building at 7 p.m. and shut off the electricity. No more questions asked. And the guy goes and does his job. As you go up on the hierarchical ladder, well, other people will know that you got to shut off the electricity because somebody's going to be in there and he's going to be doing something. Maybe he's going to look out the window to shoot President Kennedy, for instance, or whatever. So, you know, as you go up and up the ladder, you understand more, you have the wider picture. But most people in corporations have no idea what they're doing. As a matter of fact, many people in their company, for example, in a bank, have no idea how a bank even works, which is something that, again, J. Edward Griffin so splendidly explains in The Creature from Jekyll Island. And perhaps the best example of this is not just in corporations, but in the network of very powerful and very well-organized think tanks, like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and other similar. Some are more specialized, some are more geared on specific geographies that work in about a network of 200 or 300 think tanks throughout the world that are the ones who do all the planning and especially the long-term planning. And then each part is executed from corporations, from banks, from government, from the media, from universities, from multilateral organizations like the World Bank, the UN, the IMF. Each does his own job and does it within a vaster plan which only the people way on top know about.
Yeah, in the real world, the James Bond villain doesn't use shark tanks to kill you. He uses think tanks, like the CFR.
Well, yeah, so you know,
Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. My very special guest is Adrian Salbucci, coming in us live from Buenos Aires, and we'll be right back after the break. I wanna jump it.
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, broadcasting live from New Zealand, live from the future, from the sunny, slave, fabulous, fluoride head fortress of Auckland, New Zealand.
Well, okay.
Yeah, and welcome back to special guest, Adrian Salbucci, who has just unfortunately dropped off the line. There we go. Adrian, welcome.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, one thing we wanted to go into was the idea of business networking and things of that nature within the sort of truth/alternative/conspiracy movement. And what's your real thoughts on that?
Well, basically, look. What we're trying to do, and we're doing this sort of with friends in America, with friends in Canada, with friends in different parts of the world, is first of all, you have to understand how the world really works. And we were saying this a few moments before, which is very different from what the mainstream media would have you understand. Once you understand how the world really works, that power has been privatized, that the basic long-term planning emanates from the Council on Foreign Relations, from the Trilateral Commission, and other think tanks, and not from the mind of Obama or Hillary Clinton or David Cameron or Sarkozy or whoever. They are just puppets. They are the circumstantial CEOs who are in power for a couple of years, and they really have no real leverage. The people that do have leverage are those folks who are in power year after year after year, like your David Rockefellers, your Rothschilds, your George Soros, your Kissingers, your Brzezinskis, and so forth. So when you understand how the world really works, then the second thing you understand, at least I do it down here in Argentina, is you understand why your own country is in such dire straits. I mean, Argentina has systematically been hit by the bankers, by the politicians, by all these this political CEO system that we have. And when you understand how it works and why the global power elite want you to think and act in a certain way, and at the same time, they don't want you or me or your listeners to think and act in certain other ways, then it's as simple as ABC. You just have to do the opposite of what they want. And we boiled it down. We call it Second Republic Project. We boiled it down to five basic pillars. They don't want us, first of all, they don't want us to have a sovereign nation state, whether in New Zealand, Argentina, America, or Europe. Fine, let's restore our sovereign nation states. Second, they want to manage and handle our currency, our public currency, so that they can replace it and control it with private, fractional lending, banking, funny money. Fine, let's restore in each country, or at least in each region, sovereign public currency, which is interest-free. Third pillar, they want us to do everything based on debt. They have convinced us, hypnotized us into thinking that you have to do everything becoming indebted. Fine, let's reject the debt-based system. Fourth pillar, and we were discussing this a few moments ago, they imposed so-called democracy, which is absolutely subservient to and subordinated to money power. Fine, let us liberate, free up our republican institutions from the grasp of money, from the grab of money. In other words, let's free them from the money powers. And fifth, they've taken all our values and they've turned them upside down. Well, fine, let's put them right side up again. If you take those five basic pillars, you will see that just about all the problems, whether in America, in Europe, in Argentina, in Brazil, in New Zealand, in Australia, in Japan, practically all the social problems we have will fall under one of those five pillars, because we lack sovereign nation states, we lack proper money, we are too indebted unnecessarily with the bankers, with the major bankers, with the Goldman Sachs and the and the J.P. Morgans and the Citicorps and the HSBCs. Fourth, our Republican system is totally dependent on money. And fifth, our values have been thrown topsy-turvy.
Now, do you think that the United Nations, do you think the U.S. is being used by the banking elite and the U.N. and to bring in just like a total police state, to bring in like, you know, Team America, World Police?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, Americans are now in for a very, very hard time, because, look, one of the things we have to do, Vince, is go back to having a historical perspective. If you look at things with historical perspective, right after the Second World War, the world went into those 40 years of absolute schizophrenia when we were split right down the middle. There's the former Soviet Union and its allies and the so-called democracies on this side. It was a very unjust, but it was a very stable world, you know, like, you don't play my backyard, I won't mess around with your backyard. And that held until somebody way up there, and Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is the ideologue of the Trilateral Commission, set it out in a book he wrote in 1971 called Between Two Ages, The Role of America in the Technotronic Age. They realized that it was time to move on, that they wanted to go into a new world order at the time, which they later called globalization. But they needed for one of the two superpowers to go. And the Soviet Union went, and it went without even firing a shot. It's all beautifully explained, a little bit between the lines, in this book by Brzezinski from 1971. That's what the Trilateral Commission was all about. It took them 18 years, but they finally achieved it. In 1990, the Soviet Union went, and in came globalization. But
Hold on a second here. How exactly did Russia fall apart? Like, how was... Because I know, at least I suspect, that they were set up in certain ways and collapsed from within, so that their country imploded. And if that's so, are similar measures currently in place in the US of A?
Yes, and of a different nature. And I would really recap or summarize it as follows. What the Trilateral Commission, founded in June 1973, had as its main mission, and this is something that Brzezinski and Rockefeller explain in no uncertain terms, is they infiltrated the former Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact, or should I say the East European countries that were part of the Soviet system. They infiltrated them, because they had better technology, with Western corporations. Fiat from Italy was one of the main ones. Ford from America. Practically all companies there went into the former Soviet Union, into Czechoslovakia, into Poland, etc., and they set up joint venture companies. 51% of the sharehold was the state, the Soviet state. 49%, for example, was Fiat or Ford or whatever. But in with that came technology, which the Soviets said, okay, we like that. But in with that also came a cultural revolution, because McDonald's came in with that, rock music came in with that, the foreign media came in with that, MTV came in with that. So there was a cultural revolution literally in there. People wanted to have quote-unquote democracy a little bit innocently, and the country imploded because it just couldn't keep up. Add to that the Star Wars Initiative challenge made by the Reagan-Bush government, which the Soviet Union would have been able to face from the technological side, but they just didn't have the economic money and the power to go with it. So those two things combined made the Soviets say game over, and the Soviet Union collapsed. Let's fast forward now 21 years, because globalization started in 1990 when George H.W. Bush talked about a new world order and everything, et cetera, and the first Gulf War and so forth. What was globalization? Globalization, amongst other things, was the 21 years that the global power elite needed in order to put in place full electronic control systems, the internet, cellular telephones, 500 TV channels, a radio frequency identification chips, etc., all the stuff we know. They have it pretty much in place. It's a two-edged sword, because we're using it right now in a very positive way, but it works. And now they need to move on. They need to move on from globalization to outright world government. And just as the Soviet Union had to fall when we went from the bipolar world to globalization, now that they want to wrap up globalization and go and move on towards world government, the superpower that has to go into the waste bin of history is the United States of America. So they are letting...
So it's like a one-step, two-step, three-step program, right? If you want people to accept world government, they have to go from free society to free society against another free society and then battling against each other to the collapse of the winner of that in the eventually, and so that there's basically a global weakness so that the globe has to unite in order to support itself as the pretext.
It's a Hegelian dialectic. Absolutely, they do that all the time, and psychological warfare has been their main interest, their main instrument to do that. That's why what we are seeing now, and I think that helps to explain why. Oh, why all of a sudden somebody way upstairs said, hey, let America have a black president, and his name is going to be, of all things, Barack Hussein Obama. Do people realize that a country that had a William Jefferson Clinton, a George Walker Bush, a John Fitzgerald Kennedy, a Lyndon Baines Johnson, all of a sudden has a Barack Hussein Obama? It's like a bad joke. But that's what we have, because America is earmarked to go into the waste bin of history. It's going to disappear, which doesn't mean it's going to be destroyed. The Soviet Union disappeared, and in its place you have 20-some-odd much weaker countries. Even though Russia is still very strong, it does not yet wield the punch that the former Soviet Union used to have in relative terms. So America is going to change into something different, something much more controllable, because a world government cannot tolerate that there should be a powerful, sovereign nation-state like America, because so far it's been in friendly hands. It's been in the hands of the Bushes and in the hands of the Clintons and in the hands of the Obamas. But what would happen if a real patriot were to somehow, for some weird twist of history, make it to the White House? And if that real patriot were to say, okay, to hell with the Fed, to hell with this banking system, I'm going to put all the bankers in jail, I'm going to shut down a lot of these media operators, I'm going to close down half of our bases abroad, and I'm going to put the armed forces to work for them for the national interests of the United States of America, and not
get assassinated in a motorcade.
Exactly. Well, yeah, you're right. But you see, we've learned a lot. You've really hit the nail on the head. But we've learned a lot since then, and they know that people who, at the time, we even accepted the Warren Commission and so forth, thanks to internet, thanks to guys like you, with programs like yours, thanks to American Freedom Radio and all the colleagues that are doing the same thing, people are thinking now. Besides, the Kennedy assassination was almost a one-off thing. Well, then we had Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King. But now we've had truly tremendous things like 9/11, 7th July in England, 11th March in Spain, and even some very, very tough questions that are being asked regarding HAARP and all these earthquakes that we're having all over the place, whether it be in Japan, in Chile, in Haiti, or in China. So people, or at least a lot of people, are waking up to this reality, which I think explains the fact that why they are rushing things so much, because they realize that their window of opportunity may be closing if people like you and I can set up sufficient critical mass of really free-thinking people who are not going to take it anymore.
Free-thinking people that are not going to take it anymore. Doesn't that have a nice ring to it, you know?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, that is what they most fear, and that is why you just said it a few moments ago. They know that if things get out of hand, they will have to implement a police state in countries like America and Europe. That's what FEMA is all about. That's what the Patriot Act is all about and its counterparts in other countries. That's what full-body scans in airports are all about. That's what 2 million closed-circuit TV cameras in London are all about. I was in London a few months ago, and you can't even go into a public loo without a camera focused on you. I mean, they are all over the places, in staircase landings, when you take the elevator, when you take the tube, when you wait for the bus, when you take a taxi. I mean, there is full surveillance, which is what globalization was all about, implementing the electronic infrastructure for full control. Now, a lot of people are not going to accept that, but they do wield a lot of power. And, you know, it's not an easy black or white war anymore, the way the Second World War was, for example, where you're either on one side or another side. This is a borderless war, and we are attacked with swarms of problems, technological, political, ecological, monetary, financial, and they keep people always on the brink of a nervous attack, because that's the best way to keep everybody controlled. So the more we help people awaken, it's sort of like the Matrix. You take the red pill, all of a sudden you wake up and you realize how bad things are, and you just can't go back anymore. And that's what I think is your job and our job and any true patriot's job.
Yeah, pass the red pills, please, as G. Edward Griffin says.
Exactly. And can you let me add another idea, which I think is very important? You know what these guys' real secret weapon is? I mean, the real weapon of mass destruction? The fact that they are trained and educated in long-term thought. When you are trained from you're very small, this is a social thing. This is an Ivy League university type thing. This is a family inheritance type thing. When you are trained to think in long terms, A, you realize that a lot of things that you want to have, you start them today, and maybe they will be achieved by your son or your grandson 50, 60, 70 years down the road. Secondly, when you think long term, you don't just think about yourself. You think at least about your interest group or your class or your elite class or whatever. And what have they done with all of us? I'm 58.
Well, you know, we're all getting older every day. But you know what's getting even older than us? Tyranny! It's getting old, man. And, you know, and it just keeps coming back. It's like political chlamydia. Well, you're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, The Lighter Side of Genocide, and we'll be right back.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
It's Tyranny's theme song, because it is freaking everywhere.
Yeah. It's ubiquitous.
Yeah. Welcome to the fabulous jailhouse rock we call planet Earth.
Yeah, it is absolutely a madhouse, you know. You know, Vince, we just before the break, I was mentioning that the global power elite's key instrument is long-term planning. That's what the CFR does. That's what the Trilateral Commission does. That's what the Bilderbergs talk about when they meet up every year. And long-term planning really requires a discipline whereby you can divorce yourself between action and reaction, because you take an action now knowing that maybe the hoped-for reaction will come 10, 20, 50, even 100 years down the road. But what have they done with all of us? And I'm 58, so I'm probably the first generation, and you guys are the second or third generation in this. They've trained us from elementary school, high school, and even college to be short-term thinkers. What does short-term thinking mean? Hey, guys, get a good education. You got to become an accountant or a lawyer so that you have a good job, so that you can make some money. Get married, have a couple of kids, work, enjoy a little bit. Why not? Go on a holiday, buy a car, watch the telly. And when your life, when you reach 65 or 70, just retire, play golf, game over. We are all short-term thinkers, and a short-term thinker is always egotistical because he can't really fathom things much beyond his own self, his own family, his own friends. So what happens? They are the long-term thinkers, and they do it very well. They trained us all to be short-term thinkers, so they can do all that they are doing out in the open, in front of our noses, knowing that most people will not even realize what's happening because we've been trained as short-term thinkers. That's why one of the things that I always insist is start looking at the historical perspective. Start seeing that they're not talking about a new world order now. When the CFR was founded in 1919, 1919. It was founded in order to organize the New World Order after the First World War. New World Order for what? For British and American interests. When the Second World War was about to end, what did the CFR do? And they actually became part of the State Department. I have documentation showing that they actually integrated themselves into the State Department. They said, we have to prepare the New World Order for after the Second World War, the United Nations, the Bretton Woods Conference, and so forth. What did Bush Daddy do in 1990? We have a New World Order. And what are they doing now? They're also calling outright world government the New World Order, because they know, actually, New World Order is not so much a stage as a turning point. Every time they reach specific turning points, they start talking about New World Orders. So we have to understand that these guys plan 100 years in the future. The world we have today, they were already planning it in the 40s and in the 50s. So we have to start tuning into them, ourselves becoming medium and long-term thinkers, because then the cat is out of the bag, and we will understand very well what they are doing, why they are doing it, and why they don't want us to understand and to realize what is happening.
You use an interesting phrase there, the cat out of the bag. Now, some people don't give a lot of thought to what that means. It's from the old sailing days. A cat was a cat of nine tails. It was a whip with nine tails on it, essentially. And there was all broken glass and shards of metal and things like that inside all the whip parts. And you'd be given lashes with this if you were disorderly. So as soon as the captain takes the cat out of the bag, it's all over for you, man.
I'm glad you know about that.
You know, and it just invokes for me the kind of torture and brutality that really must be conjured up when you think about exposing the evil, corrupt, and murderous and genocidal scumbaggery that happens on this planet.
It's very eloquent. I like your very picturesque language to describe that. But people have to understand that. Normally, people are very scared of anything that will alter their lives. And since they are short-term thinkers and egotistical, they will only react when it hits them personally. Let me share with you what happened down here in Argentina. Just very, very quickly. In 2001, we had an engineered monetary, banking, and financial meltdown. The whole system just went. People lost their job. Half the population fell below the poverty line. Gross domestic product fell 40% in just 6 months. And people went out, took to the streets with pots and pans, and they started banging on the banks, give me my money back and everything, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But what happened? They only went out into the street because it hit them personally. Their money was in the bank, and it was their money that they couldn't take out. As soon as things, quote unquote, became more normal, and they got their money back, they just put the pots and pans away, and they just went on holiday. So again, the lack of solidarity amongst people, and this is a global phenomenon, has a lot to do with the fact that from school onwards, from elementary school, from preschool, we are taught to just think very small. Long term for any one of us is next Monday, maybe a month from now. We have to start thinking the way they do, because let's face it, they've been very successful in concentrating power by using these methods, and they've been very successful in pulling the rug from under our feet and taking all the power that really belongs to we the people, no matter what country you're in. They usurped it, and they are using it not just in their favor, but against us. So we better start doing something about the whole thing very quickly.
Thank you very much, Adrian Salbucci, for coming on the show with us today. I wanted to kind of make the point here that they've been very busy bees indeed, and they make their time worth something because they make sure that they're doing something naughty with each and every moment of every day. And so must we. I aim to misbehave. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show and my very special guest, Adrian Salbucci. Thank you so much for coming on, mate.
My pleasure. Cheers.
All right. There he goes. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you again sometime. And check out the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, our fabulous archives and Kiwi collaborators. And support our sponsors as well. And that helps fund the broadcast. Thank you very much. Catch you later.